I want to talk a little bit about an old project now, water hyacinth. Work on this was originally done back in the late 60s, early 70s. Three insects were introduced into the U.S. More were introduced into some other countries. There's been renewed interest in this now, particularly when it began to show up in Africa, most notably in Lake Victoria. It caused a lot of alarm with very, very serious big infestations. We, along with colleagues from South Africa, Australia, and China, we formed a global working group under the auspices of IOBC. We met a couple times to get together to try to make recommendations and come up with solutions on how to deal with the infestations in some of these new areas. And as part of this, we discussed some of the things that mediate the effects of the biocontrol agents, particularly these two weevils that were first introduced in Florida in 72 and 74, Neocotina iacornii and Neocotina brucei. Among the list of things that were brought up that might mitigate against them being effective was high nutrient availability in the water. This didn't seem right to me. I never had that impression from my work in Florida. And going back through the literature, I didn't find any real evidence of this. And there's not even anecdotal indication that this might be true. Yet this is the impression that everybody had. So we began a series of experiments looking into this. Let me just give you a little bit of the life history of these critters. Eggs are laid in the leaf tissue or in the leaf petiole. The adults feed on the surface of the leaves. They generally congregate during the day down in this newly opening bud leaf, which is where they do most of their feeding. As it opens up, that feeding's carried over into the mature leaf. The larvae burrow down the petioles. They work their way down to the base of the plant, eventually emerging here around the root collar at the root zone. Very often they damage these developing axillary buds, which produces the clonal growth that expands out and covers the surface of the water. They form these little nodules on the roots or little cocoons that the pupae develop in. The entire life cycle takes about 40 to 45 days. They've been manifestly effective in some areas. This is a site down along the Tamiami Trail in the Everglades. You can use this tree as a marker here. You can compare before and after. Here, plants have been heavily damaged and are beginning to sink. Here's another site where the plants have sunk. This site is particularly interesting because this is a sewage outflow from one of the Seminole Indian villages down on the Tamiami Trail, so it gets a lot of nutrients. So in that case, it looks like there was a facilitation of high nutrient availability and the damage of the insects. However, some sites aren't like that at all, and we're still up to our ears in water hyacinth. And Bill was just telling me on Lake Victoria, after seeming to have tremendous success with the release of the insects there, there's starting to be a resurgence. So what's going on? We've done a whole series of experiments, and I'll talk about a couple of them that actually worked today. But actually, no, that's not really true. I mean, a lot of them worked. I just don't have time to talk about them all. But in the first one, I looked at the effect of nutrients in the water on the reproductive capacity of the insects. And then the second one, we did sort of the same sort of thing, looking at the effect of the insects on the plants based on fertilization rates in the water. I should mention that second study was that we were looking at the ability of the insects to reduce the water hyacinth infestation as opposed to a growth study, which we have yet to do. We used these aquatic mesocosm tanks. To the rest of you, these might be referred to as coffin holders. In the first study, I was interested in looking at the shape of the response curves, so I used my experimental units to get as many different treatment levels as I could, rather than doing a lot of replicates. So we did 30 to 600 grams of Osmocote, which is a nice slow-release fertilizer that provided a continuous supply of nutrients. And we did this in 30-gram increments. We let the plants grow out initially before we reduced the nutrient levels, and then we thinned the plants to 12 plants, thinned the mat to 12 plants per tank. We got a nice response to nutrients looking at nitrogen as our index of plant quality. Increased up to about 400 grams per tank and then kind of leveled off after that. There is an inverse relationship between the percent nitrogen in the foliage in the leaf tissue and the percentage dry weight. So as nitrogen decreased, the carbon and nitrogen ratio increased dramatically, and the plant tissue became proportionately more dry. However, weevils don't eat dry plant tissue; they eat fresh plant tissue. So I converted the dry weight data back to a fresh weight, and it was kind of interesting because I found there was kind of like this stair-step pattern where we had three groupings of low, intermediate, and high. Now, some of my data analyses, in order to get more observations into the statistics, I grouped them this way as opposed to using the original fertilizer treatments. We went out to the field late in the fall when we knew that the weevils generally have degenerated ovaries. They're kind of in a reproductive quiescence. I don't know if it's a true diapause. And then we held them in adverse conditions until we were sure that none of them were reproductive. We marked the weevils with a spot of paint. We did three treatments, in Brucke alone, in Icorni alone, and the two together in a 50-50 mix. They were released in stages because of the difficulty of getting enough insects all at one time, but they were released between December and January of 2005. Then in mid-February, we extracted the weevils, and we did this by building this contraption that we could put over the tanks and push the plants under the water. Now, these are not truly aquatic weevils. They're semi-aquatic, and they don't like to be underwater for very long. So we push the plants under, and then we float styrofoam on top of the water. The weevils will come up, and they'll be on this white styrofoam. We can flip it over and collect them off. So after we did that, we pulled the original female weevils out, the ones that were marked. We dissected them, and we looked at the status of their ovaries. This is a healthy functioning ovary. This is a degenerated ovary. Now, a lot of times people ask me, how many weevils does it take to kill a water hyacinth plant? And I've got to tell you, all weevils are not created equal. You've got to know the reproductive status of the insect. And it's quite often to find weevils in the field where the majority of the population are in this degenerated state. So I think, you know, this is a very important bit of knowledge to have about what's going on when you monitor insect populations, or at least populations of these weevils. We graded the ovaries as to healthy functioning or degenerated non-functioning. We counted the number of discernible follicles in the ovarioles, and you can usually count them all the way up to here. This one probably has about 10 or 12 follicles. We did the total for all four. We counted the number of ovulated eggs in the oviducts. We determined previously that all of them had mated before we released them into the tanks because there was sperm in the spermatheca. When we pulled the weevils out, here's basically what we found. There was a distinct population response. And again, here I've got these grouped into this low, medium, and high grouping. Brucke had consistently a higher percentage of reproductive females than Icornii, about 10%. But there was a really clear fertilizer effect on the proportion of the population that was reproductive. There's also an individual effect. When we looked at the number of ovulated eggs produced in females with healthy ovaries, there was a direct response to fertilizer level. Even the ones with degenerated ovaries that some of them had ovulated eggs as well, and it increased with fertilizer level. The same for the number of follicles. Those with healthy ovaries tended to increase with fertilizer level. Those with degenerated ovaries, they also increased a bit, but it was a much flatter response. We continued, we didn't stop the study there. We went back to the tanks and we submerged the plants. When we first saw evidence of emergence of a new generation, we submerged the plants every 2 weeks. So we pulled the wheels out and we counted, we did a cumulative count per treatment. And it was kind of interesting what we found out. In these high fertility with the mixed populations, we tended to get more weevils with two species present than we did with either pure population. When we went to medium, now you note that these scales are quite different. When we went to medium populations, we got many fewer weevils, and we tended to get more Icornii than we did alone, than we did Brucii alone, or the two species together. When we went to low fertility, we got almost no Brucii, but almost all the weevils in the mixed populations were Icornii. We got a few more Brucii in the pure populations, but again, like, we didn't even get a return on our investment. This chart just shows the increase in the weevil numbers extracted per tank against the biomass of the plants at the final harvest. And if you didn't know any better, you would assume that what we're seeing here is just a response to the amount of plant material present. But because we do know what the situation was with the female weevils and the reproductive capacity of the female weevils, we know that this really is a response on the part of the reproductive females and not a response to plant abundance. Although these are collinear effects and they're very hard to discern at the end. The next experiment was the one I mentioned where we were looking at a tank full of plants and measuring the insect's ability to reduce the biomass or reduce the abundance of those plants under these different fertilizer treatments. We used those, we reduced it down to 5 fertilizer treatments with 4 replicates. We had no weevils in Brucii alone, in Icornii alone, and the two together in a 50-50 mix. We evaluated them based on plant volume, flowering, and we monitored flowering weekly, biomass, which we did at the end as a final harvest, and plant density, which we did at the end as a final harvest. We started off with 120 plants per tank. There's 24 weevil pairs, males and females, which corresponded with 1 pair for every 5 plants, which is a fairly low density. The insects were released late April, early May, and the plants were harvested early September. And this is what we saw in terms of flower production. There was a, right away, before there was much effect of the insects, we saw a burst of flowering. There was an initial burst, it dropped off, and then there was another burst. In the controls, we got flowering pretty much throughout the experiment. When we had weevils present, though, this was really reduced. With both species, or Icornii, we got a little bit here and there, but with Brucii, we got absolutely no flowering. Something about the way the insect affects the plant just absolutely stopped flowering in it. This bottom line just puts averages the 3 herbivory treatments. Darn it. Averages the first 3 herbivory treatments to compare it to the controls. So clearly, Brucii had a bigger effect on flowering than Icornii did, although both had a pretty dramatic effect compared to the controls. This was how we measured plant volume. We had this T-shaped rod that we gently pushed the plants down to one end of the tank. We measured the area of tank covered then and the height of the plants to get an estimate of volume, which we've previously found corresponds really nicely to biomass. So it's a non-destructive way to measure biomass. And this is kind of what we found. Early on, shortly after release of the weevils, we didn't see much effect at all, but Brucii was first out of the gates. We saw the greatest reduction in the tanks where we had Brucii alone. This continued in July. The Icornii was kind of lagging behind. Pretty much the same in August, but then in September, the tanks with Icornii dropped drastically, especially in the high nutrient treatments. And then when we harvested the plants at the end, this just gives you an idea of what the tanks look like. This red line is the modal height of the control tanks, and you can see the effect of the insects across the board. And you can see the effects of the nutrients going down this way, fairly small stunted plants, but they're doing fine, and really lush in that high level treatments. And here's what the biomass looked like at the end when we finally harvested them just a few weeks later. The tank with Icornae just dropped off completely. They were all dead in the high nutrient level tanks. The plants with Brucci were still hanging on. The combination was right in the middle, whereas the controls were going like gangbusters. We don't really know what happened yet. I'm still analyzing a lot of this data, but I think part of this had to do with the way the insects were affecting the plants. This is the Icornae tank compared to the Brucci tank. Both are severely impacted, but the feeding damage on the Brucci tank is mostly to the leaf blades, whereas that on the Icornae tank was mostly at the base of the petioles and done by larvae. Whereas this is more of an adult effect, this is more of a larval effect. And it seemed like there weren't very many larvae in the Brucci tank, even in the high nutrients, which should have been conducive to ovarian development and reproduction. This might explain what happened there. Somehow, if you look at the foliar nitrogen in the leaf tissue over time and the different fertilizer treatments, the controls maintained high levels of foliar nitrogen pretty much through the experiment. But if you look at the Brucci tank, at the end result was feeding somehow caused that relationship to collapse. So there were no significant differences between foliar nitrogen levels among the five fertilizer treatments within Brucci. Icornae did that to some degree, but not nearly to the degree that we see with the Brucci. So I think probably Icornae was able to maintain reproduction and eventually flatten those plants, whereas Brucci was kind of sensitive to this reduced foliar quality. When we looked at the weevil populations that we extracted from them for the single species treatments, Brucci alone or Icornae alone, it was kind of interesting because in low fertility, we got very low numbers of Brucci out, and it increased up to where they were comparable at the higher levels. With Icornae, we got nice numbers out all the way across the board. So it seems like Brucci is really, really sensitive to foliar nitrogen, or at least the plant, some aspect of plant quality, and Icornae is much more tolerant of a wider range of these conditions. When we looked at the mixed populations, it was kind of weird. It was very different. The proportion of the population of Brucci increased as water fertility levels increased, and the proportion of Icornae decreased. So there may be some, in these mixed populations, there may be some competition going on that we'll have to look into a little bit more closely. So in conclusion, nutrients drive the system, no doubt about it. And in Brucci seems to be more sensitive than in Icornae to plant quality. Water hyacinth systems are very dynamic. Nutrients often come in just flushes. As the plants grow larger, the nutrient in the tissue is diluted by biomass. So it's a very dynamic system, and it can really play an important role in what kind of effect the insects have. It was interesting that herbivory kind of negated the effects of added nutrients when the plants were growing in high densities. In other words, the nutrient response that we saw in the control was muted when the insects were present. Herbivory suppresses flowering, and in Brucci seemed to be a bit more effective than Icornae in that regard. In Brucci, effects were apparent earlier. The literature data suggests that it has a shorter life cycle, but Icornae was really effective, especially in the high nutrient conditions. So low rather than high nutrients seems to mediate the effectiveness of the weevil. And I think there may be just only brief periods of time when the plants really have the foliar nitrogen levels that the weevils need to really sustain high levels of reproduction. So, the end question, going back, which is the better agent? If we were going to go back to the 70s and release only one, which would we choose? If we had to go strictly on the basis of these results, I would have to say probably iCorny would be the better choice because of its lesser sensitivity to these nutrient loads. But in the end, I would say go ahead and release them both. Thanks. John.
Did you look at Nocema for the weevils?
Not in this study, no. But we've seen it before. It's out there. We get very, very low levels of it normally in the field, 1% of the population maybe. I know one site where we seem to consistently get fairly high levels, but it doesn't seem to affect the weevil populations. Could affect reproduction, though. Peter?
Do these insects fly, and is there a ovogenesis migration syndrome that you could also evaluate in relation to nutrients?
They do. We collected weevils at the end, and we've dissected them. I haven't gotten the data ready yet, though. They normally they don't fly. Normally they have undeveloped flight muscles. Periodically, and for reasons we don't yet fully understand, those flight muscles will develop and they will disperse. But we haven't seen it. We thought it would be in response to densities, but it doesn't seem to be the case. So I'm curious to see if it relates to these nutrient levels. Other questions?
Thanks.